It's nice to be after Robert because we are talking about similar things, but I'm coming at it from a very different direction. At the University of Wyoming, I'm involved in several projects. The overall goals of these projects vary a lot. Most of them have to do with nutrient cycling or watershed hydrology, and I'm kind of involved in soil moisture and soil temperature monitoring bit of these larger studies. Let's see, is there a mouse here? So this is a study in irrigated agriculture near Nebraska on the Platte, near the Platte River. This is dry land wheat, where you have these 2-year rotations of one crop in 2 years, basically a wheat crop. This is rangeland. This is higher elevation near Laramie on a very gloomy day. And this is in the mountains, also near Laramie. Since Wyoming is a very cold climate, soil water freezing plays a role, snow plays a role, and to really study the water fluxes in these systems, you have to also study the energy fluxes because you have to know when snow melts and stuff like that. And what is nice about hydroprobes, which we use for all these studies, is that they can measure both permittivity, which you can relate to water content, and temperature all in the same soil volume. So that's why I like to use these sensors. As part of these larger studies, I've been kind of trying to figure out how do these sensors actually work and how can we effectively calibrate them. Before I get into the really technical stuff, first, why are we doing this? This is some data from the wheat field that you saw previously. So this is about 1 year of data. So this is this. Let's start with the soil temperatures. So about 1 year, like I said. So winter, it gets really cold. This soil freezes down to at least 30 centimeters and maybe even more. And that's nicely reflected in these calculated water contents, where you see this during the winter, the water content decreases sharply as liquid water is turned into ice. So it's a really neat tool to kind of understand these processes. And then others will start to worry about how does this affect microbes. For example, during winter, as liquid water is disappearing, how does that affect microbes? How does that affect nutrient cycling? So then, the more detailed part of it. So like I said, I don't want to use something that I don't understand. So I spent quite a lot of time on trying to understand this sensor. It's an impedance probe, and the circuit, the basic circuit is really very simple. You have an oscillator which works at 50 megahertz. You have two resistors in series, and then you have a load, and the load, that's partly the internal part of the transmission line and partly the external part, the rods that are in the soil. And you measure three voltage magnitudes, V1, V2, V3, and that allows you to determine this load, the impedance of the load actually. So that's done using this equation where you have the phasor voltage over the phasor current. And so these three voltages, only one is shown here, but the other goes in here. The other two go, one goes in here and one of the others. Anyway, I'm not showing everything, but these voltages go in this top equation here, and that allows you to calculate the impedance of the load. Once you have the impedance of the load, then you have to kind of subtract the impedance of the internal transmission line, and this ZZ is the, it's a lumped circuit approach for the internal transmission line. So this is the impedance due to the capacitance of the internal transmission line. And the ZL is due to the inductance, impedance due to inductance of the internal transmission line. And if you know these and you can calibrate for that, then you can calculate the impedance of the rods. That's what we are after, because then in the next equation we can relate the impedance of the rods to the complex permittivity of the material. Once we know the complex permittivity, then we can take the real part and relate that to soil water content. So there's a whole bunch of steps. It's not an easy sensor to figure out, but it's very well, it's working very well. It's especially this electrical part, if you test that in liquids, you end up with R squareds of 0 or 0.99. So it's very well defined. So kind of to summarize, we want to know the water content. We measure the permittivity. Permittivity leads to a certain impedance of the rods. That leads to a certain impedance at the load, and this load impedance is what we measure with these three voltages. So that's kind of the basic principle of operation. Then, and Robert talked a lot about this already, at 50 megahertz, and that's the downside of this sensor, you are very sensitive to soil type. And I tried to kind of explain this by these two graphs. This is made-up data for core sand. I just did that behind my computer and didn't do a very good job because I assumed that the sand could go to 0.59% water. What I'm trying to explain here is that if you measure different frequencies in sand, then that doesn't really matter. For certain water content, you will always find these lines are different water contents. You will always find kind of the same relative real permittivity. If you do the same thing in bentonite, so that's pure clay, then it matters at what frequency you measure. If you are measuring with a TDR, for certain water content, you find certain permittivity. If you go up, you find a higher permittivity. But at 50 megahertz, this effect of water content, this effect is much larger. So at this frequency, you, for the same water contents, you find much higher real permittivities. And that's due to these additional polarizations that happen at 50 megahertz. So you need to do a soil-specific calibration with these sensors in any soil except for sands. So that's kind of a serious downside of this sensor, I believe, compared to TDR, where usually you can get away without really a soil-specific calibration. So we looked at this a bit more detail. We did a whole bunch of these soil-specific calibrations and tried to figure out if we can come up with something better. So the lab procedure is very simple. So you take soil from the field, you dry it, crush it, sieve it, mix it with water, pack it in a container, take a hydroprobe reading, so you get real and imaginary permittivity. And we also take TDR readings so that we get apparent permittivity and conductivity at direct current. And then we go to the next, we determine the water content in the container, and then we go to the next point, increase the water a little bit, and so on. So we can come up with a whole curve. These are some of the results. This is for four soil materials, which are distinctly different. So this is for fine sand, sandy loam, loam, and bentonite. So we just plot water content on the x-axis, apparent permittivity on the y-axis. For TDR, TDR gives you the apparent permittivity. For the hydroprobe, you have to do a little calculation. You have to convert the real and the imaginary permittivity into an apparent permittivity, so that we can make a fair comparison. And for just for reference, the top equation is also given. The results are really as predicted. For the sand, you very much follow the top equation for both the hydroprobe and the TDR. There are some deviations here, but that has to do with the fact that water in sand starts to redistribute as soon as you pack a container. So it's a bit messy. But at this point, when redistribution, when soil is almost saturated, no more redistribution, and then it falls nicely on this line. For the sandy loam, you see that TDR behaves as expected, and hydroprobe is a little bit higher, again due to these additional polarizations. This effect increases for the loam, and for the bentonite, the apparent permittivity according to the hydroprobe goes off the chart here. And for TDR, you get this problem that you don't see a reflection anymore, so due to complete attenuation. And that's, bentonite is really an extreme material, so that's nothing to worry about. Then the more interesting slide, I think, also results again for the same four soil materials: fine sand, sandy loam, loam, and bentonite. Now what I'm showing is the real and imaginary permittivity, so that is a result from the hydroprobe. Then conduction, we have this DC conductivity coming from the TDR, and we can calculate that to kind of an effective conduction thing for at 50 megahertz. And what is nice compared to TDR is that we exactly know the frequency here, so we can calculate this term very accurately. And then what is also neat, and it's very simple actually, is we have the real permittivity or the imaginary permittivity from the hydroprobe. We have this guy from the TDR, the conduction component, and that allows us to calculate relaxation losses directly. Relaxation losses, you cannot measure it directly, but it's an important part of this, the total losses. So just looking at these results, again, water content x-axis, permittivity on the y-axis, we see, and I should have plotted this in colors, I see now. So basically what you see is that real, imaginary, and conduction all go up if you go from a fine sand to sandy loam to bentonite. What is the most interesting bit here is these relaxation losses, because those are hard to get at. You see that in the sand, relaxation losses are zero. That's what you would expect. This is a low surface area soil. There's very little interaction between the ions and the solid surfaces. Relaxation losses start to increase for the sandy loam, become bigger for the loam, and they are highest for the bentonite. So there's quite a bit of relaxation losses going on here. And I haven't seen many studies where you can really see, okay, this much relaxation is going on. This has practical implications because for the in the hydro manual, for example, it is suggested that you can calculate conduction straight from the imaginary permittivity by neglecting these relaxation losses. Here you see that it's not a very good idea to just neglect relaxation losses except for the sand. In all the other soils, it's a significant portion of the total energy losses. So, and this goes back a little bit to calibration. Can we calibrate these sensors in a smarter way? Because we have seen that this the real permittivity gets higher once you get in these more fine textured soils. The energy losses also get higher. Can we somehow relate those two things? So this is a study done with 19 soils. And what we did is we fitted this simple refractive index equation to our permittivity water content data. So for each soil, we have 10 of these data points, different moisture contents. We fit this equation through there. Then we optimize only the slope, A, and B, we use a value that works more or less for all soils. I tested whether optimizing B would help, but it doesn't. So just optimize this slope A, and then relate A to clay content, the direct current conductivity at saturation, when the soil is most conductive, when it's saturated, the imaginary part at saturation, and the relaxation losses at saturation. So we are slowly getting into kind of some kind of pedo transfer thing for calibrating these hydroprobes. These are the results. So on the x-axis is the percentage clay, here the conductivity at saturation, imaginary permittivity at saturation, and then relaxation losses at saturation. And here is this value for the regression coefficient A. So let's take them one at a time. So for clay, we get this slightly positive relationship, but the R squared is quite bad. So there's no real relationship here between clay content and this regression coefficient A, which is kind of surprising. Then here, this conductivity of the saturated soil, we see that there's a pretty good relationship between this guy and the regression coefficient A. If the smaller the regression coefficient A gets, that means that you're measuring higher permittivity values, real permittivity values. A very similar, I mean, in trouble already?
Oh, no, you got 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. Good. This is for imaginary permittivity. There, the R squared is very similar to what you get for conduction, and here it is for relaxation. So there's some interesting stuff here. So why is there no relationship with clay content? And Mark Seifert of USDA in Boise gave a really nice explanation for this in one of his papers by explaining that, and it makes sense, that clay content by itself doesn't really explain everything. It's clay type that is very important. And clay type is, determines how much surface area there is, and that determines how much cation exchange capacity there is. So that would be a much stronger indicator for this permittivity, water content permittivity relationship than just clay content. So that makes some sense. And then the others, those make sense to me. So the higher the conduction, so the more ions are floating around and interacting with the solid surfaces, the higher you get these higher interfacial polarizations, and the higher permittivities you get. Remember, the smaller the A, the bigger the real permittivity values that you get. Let's see what else. Oh yeah, practical implications of this. DC conductivity you don't know when you measure with the Hydra probe. You do know this imaginary permittivity. That's one of the outputs. So this kind of allows you to self-calibrate the sensors. You just stick them in the soil, wait for a wet period, record the imaginary permittivity during that wet period. And you can use a relationship like this to determine your A value, and that A is the slope of the relationship between the water content and the real permittivity. So you have calibrated your sensor for each layer individually and for any soil just by waiting for a while to get a wet soil. So that has some practical implications. Another thing, if you think about it, that's interesting is this guy. So this tells you that as the relaxation losses increase, we actually get higher permittivity values. So the higher the relaxation losses, the lower the A value, and that's associated with higher permittivity values. That's very counterintuitive. Normally in the TDR literature, high relaxation losses means low real permittivities, right? You have energy loss. Here we find high relaxation losses and high real permittivities. So what's going on there? So I tried to, normally relaxation losses are associated with bound water, so I tried to see what is the effect of bound water at 50 megahertz. And Robert already told us just now that there is little energy loss due to bound water at 50 megahertz. So let's check if that's true. So I used this mixing model. So mixing of free water, bound water, solids, and air. Free water permittivity is given by this Debye equation, and the coefficients are from Stograin. This guy describes bound water permittivity, and so you have these different, the closer the water is to the solid surfaces, the lower the permittivity, basically. And for bound water, I took relatively high estimates for bound water and relatively low estimates for bound water by playing with the number of molecular layers that you call bound water, and by playing with the surface area. So just remember that I have high and low estimates for bound water. And then these are the results. Again, this is the almost last slide. I think I can do it. So this is again Feinstein, Sandy Loam, Loam, and bentonite. Measured relaxation losses, measured real permittivity. And the line here the real permittivity according to the model fits well through the real measured data. It becomes increasingly worse if we move to bentonite. And the main point here is that with these high and low bound water estimates, it doesn't really matter, high and low, there is, this doesn't explain the relaxation losses due to bound water are nowhere near the relaxation losses that we actually measure in these soils. So what's going on here? So apparently these interfacial polarizations, that's the way I picture it, they not only increase the real permittivity, but they also increase the relaxation losses, because these interfacial polarizations is something that's time dependent. It takes time. And so that may create additional relaxation losses. So very quickly, before I get kicked off the stage, my conclusions. So you need to do soil-specific calibration with the hydrosensor. Relaxation losses are an important part of the total energy losses. You can come up with kind of a neat calibration procedure by just measuring either the DC conductivity or the imaginary permittivity, which you already get from the hydro sensor. Relaxation losses are not due to bound water. High real permittivity combined with high relaxation losses may be due to interfacial polarization. And these interfacial polarizations, if you move to higher frequencies, you get rid of them. So that's what happens with TDR. That's it.
Thank you.
Thanks.